Hello, and welcome to Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and on this show, we cover many aspects of life, relationships, health, direction, success, the things that people most often feel unclear about. I've now taken those questions and organised them into a short, structured guide so you can go directly to the area that matters most to you to find the answers that you're looking for. You'll find those on my website under Ask Margot at margotunlimited.com. You can also send in your questions to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. On this show, we look at the solutions we want to find, the answers, the new ways or perspectives to make life smoother, to make our health better, to make our relationships more harmonious and our partnerships stronger, to make our thinking clearer and our way forward happier. My training is with the subconscious mind because the things that keep us stuck in life, a bit like a record, where we're playing the music and then everything seems fine until suddenly there's a glitch and we're stuck. There's discord, there's lack of movement, and there is a repeat performance, usually of the unwanted kind. And that's just like what happens to us if we don't deal with the things that are subconsciously affecting our lives, our interactions with other people that hold us back, that make us fearful, that make us feel not enough, not capable. I've just seen how people's lives are freed up, totally freed up, when the issues that are showing up in their lives are investigated and cleared at a subconscious level. So that's where my training is, with the subconscious mind. And my experience of life has shown me that the story we tell is reflected in the way we live. So listen to yourself. Listen to how you speak about your life and who you are. Because that's what the world picks up. That's what the universe delivers to you. And those are the wishes your genie or your subconscious mind grants. I use the term you are the genie because if there are things that need to change in our lives to be made better, to be reassessed, to be acted upon, then there's nobody who's going to do that except us. There is no person outside of us who's going to make those changes for us. We have to look at ourselves and say, what am I going to do about what I want or who I want to be? Because you are the boss of you. You are your own genie. You are granting your own wishes. That is the power of our conscious mind. What you believe about yourself is reflected in the way you speak, the thoughts you hold, and the story you tell to yourself about yourself. Do you say, I'm not up for this, I'm not qualified for this, I can't do it? Or do you say, why should anything that's possible for someone else not be possible for me? That's my feeling on the subject. I think even if someone hasn't done it before, if it's doable, why can't I do it? That's a great place to start. So if you're feeling challenged, just try taking that approach. Talk to yourself like that. Say, why is it that I can't do that? Actually, that's too negative. Let's put it this way. I do believe it can be done, and there is no reason in the known universe why I can't be the one to do it. Do you feel the energy of that? I think it's great. It'll open up your thinking and allow you to find a new way forward. That's the power of telling a different story. Don't forget to read my little free ebook called Tell a Different Story. You'll find it on my website. Then the last part of us, after the conscious, is the superconscious, our connection to our source, to the universe. I don't mean the physical universe when I'm talking like this. I mean God, our connection and understanding of who we really are, who we are designed to be, what our capability really is. For me, it's always a question of how is the stance of life that we are in supposed to work? How is it designed to work so we live happy and fulfilled lives? So stick with me, because those are the things we cover on this show. And, well, I think it's just a key to life, actually. If you get a handle on this, your life will be sorted. Okay, let's look at our first question. It's from Mike. He says, is money really the only motivator? What really motivates people to do things in life, to build something, start something, or pursue something, Margot? People say it's just money, but is it really? I say no, it's not just money. Money is the most visible motivator and often the most talked about, but it's not the only driver behind what people actually do. In my experience, there are four distinct motivators that sit behind action, particularly when someone is building something, pursuing an idea, or stepping into something that requires effort and commitment. The first one is obvious: money. Dosh, moolah, lucre. Never say filthy lucre. It's wicked. Shocking. It's a shocking way to talk about something we want. I looked it up, actually, and it says, filthy lucre is an idiom referring to money, specifically dishonestly acquired, sordid, or tainted gains. It emphasizes money that corrupts. Oh, that's interesting. I don't think money corrupts. I think people do that all by themselves. Or money that is earned through unethical means. The phrase originates from a 1526 Bible translation by William Tyndale to describe shameful profit. People want to earn. They want to provide. They want to grow something that has financial value. They want to change their past very often. That's good. Money provides freedom, options, stability. It allows people to live well and it supports others. But for most people, money alone is not enough to sustain long-term effort. It may start something, but it really carries it all the way through. The second motivator is validation. That's where someone is driven to prove something to themselves, to others, to the world. I can do this. I was right. I'm capable. This can be a very strong driver, particularly at the early stages. It has energy behind it. It pushes people forward. But it can also be unstable, because once validation is achieved or not achieved, the motivation can shift or disappear. The third motivator is what I would call demonstration. This is a person who looks at something and thinks, I know planes can fly. I know electricity can give us light. This can be done. Such people are not necessarily driven by money or by proving something personal. They're driven by the possibility itself. They see a gap, a way forward, and they want to bring it into reality. This is often where innovation sits. It's less emotional than validational and more directed. It has a sense of purpose, but not necessarily urgency. Then we come to the last one, the fourth motivator. And this is the most powerful of all, compulsion. Or more simply, I must do this. This is not about money primarily. It's not about proving anything. It's not even about showing that something can be done. It's about an internal drive that does not leave you alone. You cannot not do it. It's the idea that keeps returning, the direction that keeps feeling inevitable, the work that feels like it belongs to you. And when someone is operating from this place, the quality of their engagement changes. They persist. They continue. They return to it again and again. They don't have to be motivated, because it's not optional. It's their passion. Most people are not operating from just one of these four motivators. They may begin with money, move to validation, discover the possibility of something, and then realize at some point that they're actually driven by something much deeper, or not. Or they may move between different stages. What's useful to recognize is where you are. Because if you believe you're motivated by money, but in truth you're driven by something you must do, then money alone will not satisfy you. If you believe you're proving something, but that phase has passed, you may find yourself feeling flat or directionless. Understanding your motivator brings you clarity, and clarity changes how you act. So no, people are not simply motivated by money. They're motivated by meaning, by identity, by possibility, and sometimes by something that feels like their purpose. And when you recognize which of these is driving you, you're in a far better place to move forward with intention, because you know who you are and what you're about. You're no longer guessing. You're acting from what is actually true for you. I find that all very interesting. Our second question is, Margot, a lot of people struggle with what they call unanswered prayer. They say they've asked, they've prayed, they've hoped, and nothing has happened. How do you understand that? Well, this is a big one for most people, because when people feel their prayers are not answered, it can shake their belief, their trust, even their willingness to ask again. And we can all relate. So let's look at it. There are usually two things happening. The first one is people are often asking God to do things that in fact they're supposed to be doing. They ask for change, but they don't move. They ask for opportunity, but they're not stepping forward. They ask for connection, but they're not reaching out. And when nothing happens, it feels as though the prayer has gone unanswered. But there are two roles here, guidance and action. If the guidance comes, an idea, a nudge, an opportunity, but we don't take the follow-up action, then the process is incomplete. It's not that nothing was given, it's that nothing was done with what was given. Sometimes it's as simple as being ready, having been given the talent and skill to do the thing that we're asking God to do. We have to stop asking God to do the stuff He's given us the tools for. Another reason prayer seems unanswered is because we often pray from a place of lack, and prayer is not designed to work like that. Please give me. I hope this happens. I need this to change. I'm not saying we can't freely talk to God. I'm just saying we need to get this part right. It's coming from a place of, I haven't got this and I want or need it. There's a sense of petitioning, of trying to persuade, of asking for something that is not ours yet. Here's what the Bible says. Whatever you ask for in prayer, believe you have received it and it will be yours. Not that you will receive it, but that you have received it. Or, if you believe, you will receive whatever you ask for in prayer. If you remain in me, and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. If we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And if we know that he hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we have what we asked of him. Or my favourite is, you shall decree a thing and it will be established for you. It's all very powerful and inspiring because it speaks of not pleading but of declaring, of standing in certainty. So what does that mean in practice? It means moving from asking for something to standing in the place where it's already given. Not begging, not convincing, not hoping, but knowing that the answer, the solution, the alignment already exists. I like to say it's already so in the unseen. The answer is here, the solution is available, the way forward is present. And then you have to live from that place, because when you do that, your thinking changes, your decisions change, your actions change, and your awareness is sharpened. Just say thank you very much. There's one more important point, and I think it's often misunderstood. We are not here to pray in order to make other people do what we want. Hello, everybody. We're not here for that. It's not our role. It's not our right. It's not our business. We do not get to override someone else's choices, their direction, or their path. Prayer is not about controlling others. It's about aligning ourselves. So if your prayer is in effect trying to make someone behave differently, choose differently, or act in a different way that suits you, you are outside the design. Instead, the question should be, what's my role here? What am I being shown? What am I to do? Because when you come back into your role, things begin to move properly again. So when someone says, my prayers are not being answered, I would suggest looking at these three things. First, am I being shown something that I am not acting on? Secondly, am I asking from lack, or am I standing in a place of already receiving? Because that's where faith is. And thirdly, am I trying to control something that is not mine to control, not my business? Because prayer, as it's designed, is not about persuading God. It's about aligning up with Him. And once that alignment is in place and you take your part in it, what once felt unanswered will begin to feel like guidance. I hope that's food for thought for you. And let's now look at our next question, which is about the messages I receive from the universe. And this has come up because the Word at Margo Unlimited is available as an app. Compliments of Apple. And that's only happened recently, and I've been telling people about it, so it's come up in conversation. And two of my children actually asked me what makes the Word different from other messages from the universe, in inverted commas, like those from Mike Dooley, who writes Tut, or The Universe Talks, or Esther Hicks, who receives messages from Abraham, or the entity called Abraham, I should say. Okay, here's my answer. There are, in fact, a number of people sharing uplifting or insightful messages under the banner of the universe, and much of that work is really valuable and uplifting. For example, Mike Dooley has for many years sent out his notes from the universe. They're positive, encouraging, and really beautifully, cleverly written. He's spoken quite openly about the fact that they are his own words. He said when he signed off from Mike, no one took any notice, so he changed it to signing off as the universe, expressed as if it was from the universe. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a creative and uplifting way of communicating ideas, and that's what his philosophy is based on. Esther Hicks, through Abraham, delivers material that's directly from the universe. And I often say, one message, many messengers. So this is not about comparison or anything competitive. It's not something I write on behalf of the universe. It's something I receive. And that's a key difference. When I receive a message, I'm not thinking it through or shaping it or deciding what I should say. In fact, I make every conscious effort to remove myself from it entirely. If I'm emotional or unsettled or grumpy or reactive about something, I will not seek a message at that time, because I don't want my state, my opinions, my judgments, or my mood to influence what comes through. I wait till I'm clear. And then, if I notice I start to think or form an idea, I stop it immediately, because it's not about me and it's not coming from me. When a message comes, it comes cleanly. I type as it arrives. I don't know what it will say at the beginning. I don't know how it will unfold, and I don't know where it will end. And then quite distinctly, it finishes and I just stop. That's the process I go through. It's direct, it's uninterrupted, and it's separate from my own thinking. Sometimes I don't even, takes me a while to agree with it. I have been doing this for a long time now, well over a decade, maybe close to two. And that consistency of process matters to me. That's how I keep the interchange as pure as possible. That's why it will never trip itself up, because it's not me delivering it. There's a difference between speaking as the universe, interpreting ideas about the universe, and receiving something as coming through from the universe. All three of those exist, and all three probably have their place, but they're not the same. And for me, the integrity of the Word sits in that distinction, in the discipline of keeping myself out of it and allowing what comes through to stand on its own. So if someone asks what makes this different, the answer is simple. It's not authored, it's received. There's more about this on my website under The Word if you want to know a bit more. So our last question today is from Richard. He says, there are only 2 days in the year that nothing can be done, so I've been told, yesterday and tomorrow. So today is supposed to be the right day to live, love, believe. And what does that really mean, though? How do you live in the now? People say it, but what does it mean? And why does it matter? Richard, it matters because now is the only place where anything actually happens. We spend a great deal of time in two places that are, in practical terms, unavailable to us. The past, where we replay, revisit, and rethink. And the future, where we anticipate, worry, sometimes plan, and imagine. And while both have their place, neither is where change occurs. You cannot alter yesterday, and you cannot act in tomorrow. You can only act now. Yet many people are not fully present in this moment. And I know that sounds a bit cliche, but just stick with me. They're either carrying something from the past or they're waiting for something in the future. I'll do that when. I'll feel better once. I'll start when the timing is right. Sounds a bit like me, actually. So life becomes something that is always about to happen. Living in the present is not about ignoring the past or refusing to plan for the future. It's about understanding their proper place. The past is for reference. The future is for direction. I want to repeat that. The past is for reference. The future is for direction. But the present is for action. And without action, nothing moves. There's also something else happening when you stay anchored in the present. Your mind becomes clearer. When you're not replaying or projecting, you have access to what's actually in front of you, what needs to be done, what can be done, what's available to you right now. And that creates a different quality of living. It's more direct, more engaged, and more effective. From a practical point of view, everything you say you want, better health, stronger relationships, meaningful work, all of it is built in the now, in the present, in what you do today. Do you reach for the food that supports you or not? Do you send the message, make the call, take the step or not? Do you speak kindly, clearly, directly or not? It's summed up in the question, who do I choose to be today? These are present moment decisions and they accumulate. And there's a deeper element to this. When people are caught in the past, they often carry that identity of the past with them. This is what happened to me. This is how it's been. And when they're caught in the future, they often delay that identity. This is who I will be. This is what my life will look like later. Who you are is being lived now. So if you want something to change, it must begin here, here and now, because today is the only place where your life is actually being lived. So if there is something to say, say it. If there's something to begin, begin it now. If there's something to change, change it now. Because yesterday cannot be altered. And I see so much regret from opportunities not taken up, from things not addressed, from people let go when their relationships weren't properly finished. Tomorrow cannot be acted in. Only today is entirely available. And how you use it will determine what follows. So, if you have questions, please do send them in to me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T, or you can send them to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz. Don't forget, you can listen to more shows, mine and others, on Apple and Spotify podcasts. Shortly, we'll finish for today, as we always do, with the word, our message from the universe. Actually, this is quite a no-nonsense message, quite a strong one. And I might talk a little bit about it afterwards. I asked the question of the universe, what about people who won't hear and accept what you say you want? I'm sure all of us can relate to this. Do you talk to people about what you need or what you want and feel that they just ignore you? They don't hear it, or they don't accept it, or they want to influence your choices in some way. This is the response I got. You do not want them to have a significant role in your life. You do not, because they will try to imprint their wishes on you. And I have explained to you that none of you are designed to be on either the giving or receiving end of that. You are the boss of you, and that is all. You are not the bosses of each other. So stop trying to be me. I thought that was so interesting, especially the last bit. And quite telling. Often I get these messages and they have a little, I feel a smile at the end of it. So I put a smiley face on it when I'm typing it. It softens it. It's not a judgment. It's not a telling off. It's a kind reminder. So we mustn't take on a role that's not ours. We mustn't try and be God in other people's lives. We must just look to ourselves, sort our stuff, find out our path and follow it, and have a little faith. I just want to slot in one more thing about timing here, because it would be wrong of me to say that I haven't waited a long time for some things to happen or some responses to be received or some answers to be given, but it hasn't stopped me believing that I will receive those answers and that that thing will happen. And when I was thinking about this show, I was thinking about God not having a watch. And it's quite a light-hearted way of looking at it. He doesn't wear a watch. We wear a watch. And it's important for us to have a little faith in each other, in ourselves, and in the source of our everything. So God, the universe. Thank you. Have a great week, and look forward to joining you next time.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.